Hi, I'm Alex Mason, host of Stock Stories. This is the podcast where we decode investing principles by analyzing the business behind the stock, as well as learning about mental models in order to help you become a better investor. You ready? Let's go. All right. Welcome. Welcome to the Stock Stories podcast. My name is Alex, and I am your host and stock storyteller for today. Thanks so much for joining me. This is the show where every single week we talk about case studies of real companies as well as mental models. Thanks so much for joining me again today. And if this is your first time joining us here on the show, welcome. I'm definitely glad that you're here. So we have been going through the entire S&P 500, and we've also been looking at mental models. Last week was a mental model episode. We talked about feedback loops. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Well, we are going to get into the episode, but before we do, I just want to ask something of you. If you have been listening to the show for a while and are really enjoying it, a way that you could really help me out is by sharing the show with a friend. Share the show with people who you think would benefit from this content. I really appreciate that. I'm really trying to grow the show and make it bigger and better. And so I really appreciate your help there. And of course, any reviews you can give on Apple Podcasts or any ratings, I think it just takes 2 or 3 seconds just to click those 5 stars. That would also really help the show get more visibility and continue to grow. So thank you in advance for helping out with that. Now let's get into the episode. We're going to talk about another company in the S&P 500. We're going to go back into actually the auto parts sector or industry. We talked a little bit about AutoZone. We talked about Advanced Auto Parts recently as well. So let's go ahead and get into yet another competitor in this space. Let's talk about O'Reilly Automotive. All right, so let's get going and talk about our company today, O'Reilly Automotive, ticker symbol ORLY. So what is O'Reilly Automotive? Well, as I just mentioned, they are an auto parts retailer. So they compete with the likes of AutoZone, with the likes of Advanced Auto Parts, and they really do pretty much the same thing. So in today's episode, we won't go as deep into the business or industry overview because we've already covered that on other episodes. So if you haven't listened to either of those episodes, AutoZone or Advanced Auto Parts, definitely check them out. So the way that these episodes are structured are as follows. We talk first about the history of the company to contextualize it. Then we move on to the business model so we get a feel for how the business is operating today. And then we look at the financials. Financials are really important. We have to make sure that this is a business that actually is making money and actually has other financial characteristics that are attractive to us as prospective investors. So we'll look at that next. And then we'll close out with some closing thoughts of my own analysis and thinking, as well as some discussion evaluation. So first, let's get into the history. So O'Reilly is a family-run business. They were started by the O'Reilly family. And their story is kind of this classic American entrepreneurial journey. This journey from people who immigrated to the United States and built incredible wealth and built a big business over time. And the way that that story starts is the O'Reilly family immigrated to the U.S. all the way back in 1849, and they immigrated from Ireland. Now, during this time, there was a really bad problem in Ireland. There was the potato famine, which was going on between 1845 and 1846, and it was hitting the country really hard, and people were really struggling. So the O'Reilly family ended up coming to America around that time to start fresh. So Charles O'Reilly, he settled in St. Louis, Missouri, and he acquired a law degree. He went to school. He had a son, Charles F. O'Reilly, and he ended up attending college in the area and becoming a traveling salesman for an auto company, and that was called the Fred Campbell Auto Supply Company. So he started getting acquainted with this type of business. Now, in the course of his job, now naturally, as a traveling salesman, you're on the road all the time. So you're just jumping from city to city trying to sell auto parts. And while he was in his job, he came across this town called Springfield, Missouri. And at the time, he saw that it was a really growing area. He saw a lot of promise in the area. So he ended up getting hired by a local auto company in Springfield called Link Motor Company. And by 1932, he ended up becoming a manager there. Now, his son, Charles H. O'Reilly, ended up growing up and working with him. And together, this father-son pair ended up making this Link Motor Company the best auto parts company in all of Springfield. And they really built up a local reputation for themselves. And this was really great. So things were going well, but they were working for someone else. They were employees. They were working in another person's business. And things kind of came to a head years later when the business started changing. So by 1957, Charles F. O'Reilly, he was 72 years old, but he was still actively working in the business. And then his son was also working in the business as well. So it's been said in the past that necessity is the mother of invention, right? And that is exactly what happened for the O'Reilly clan. The company, Link Motor, planned a reorganization that year. And what that would have meant, you know, reorganization, that's kind of like corporate euphemisms for we're going to lay a bunch of people off or we're going to change things in a really major way and shake things up. And that's exactly what was going to happen. So in this company reorganization, Charles F. O'Reilly, he would have been forced to retire, and Charles H. O'Reilly would have ended up being transferred to work in Kansas City, Missouri. Now, many people would have accepted their fate at this point in the story. They would have said, okay, well, that's what's going to happen. Fine, I'll move on. But the O'Reillys believed that they could be successful on their own. So they left Link Motor and they said, you know what? We're going to do this ourselves. We know enough about this business. We're charging out on our own. So they left Link Motor and they started O'Reilly Automotive with one store at the end of that same year. And this is, again, in 1957. Now, the following year, they started having success pretty early on. They reached $700,000 in sales. And they just kept building and building upon their expertise and knowledge of the auto supply business. They grew to multiple stores. Now, you have the situation where by the mid-70s, so by 1975, the company prospered and they ended up growing to 9 stores. And they were all still located in the Southwest Missouri region. So they stayed local. Now, they grew from this $700,000 in sales to $7 million in sales. And not only that, they had developed this distribution arm for commercial customers called O'Reilly Automotive Distributors. So that's kind of the birth of the business. Now, this service of commercial customers was solidified by management in 1978, a couple years after that, when they made a very clear commitment to focus on both markets, two markets. One, the DIY market, and then two, the commercial market. And we've talked about this at length in the AutoZone and Advance Auto Parts episode, so I won't belabor the point here, but the company was focused on both markets from all the way back in the 70s. So the company continued to grow. They continued to execute and grow their store count, sales, and profits kept going up. And by 1993, the company had its initial public offering. And then by 1998, another big event in their history is that they ended up making a really big acquisition of a company called Hi-Lo Auto Supply, and that actually doubled the company's size. So we see these trends throughout the industry from a couple of these auto supply companies. They have this period of organic growth, and then at some point, which tended to coincide in the 90s, there's all this merger and acquisition activity, and companies are just buying each other up left and right to get bigger and bigger, achieve bigger economies of scale, and unify under a single banner. And O'Reilly Automotive is no different than these other companies in this respect. They made a lot of acquisitions. And so this Hi-Lo Auto Supply acquisition, it gave them a big presence in Texas and Louisiana. They had a lot more stores. So they're expanding not just in the Midwest, but also in the South of America too. And then over the next two decades, the company expanded through even more acquisitions. Most recently in 2019, just this past year as I'm recording this, of a company called Mayasa Auto Parts, and that is what allowed them to expand into Mexico. So that is a brief history of O'Reilly Auto Parts. All right, now let's talk about the business overview. What is O'Reilly Automotive like today? Well, as of now, 2020, as I'm recording this, they have over 5,400 stores. And so this is rivaling about the same size, really, as Advance Auto and a little bit smaller than AutoZone, about 20% smaller, give or take. And so these stores are spread out across the United States and then also recently Mexico as well. And they have over 82,000 team members. So this is definitely a big business. The fundamentals of the business are the same as other auto parts specialists that we've looked at in the past. They sell car parts. That's what they do. Their business is relatively easy to understand. Now, as far as where the business is at in its growth, it's very similar to its competitors in that the store count growth is relatively slow, but it's around 4% or so per year. So that means every year they increase their store count by a little bit more, by 4%. And that's actually a little bit higher than some of their competitors. Remember, AutoZone, they're growing their store count at about 2% a year. I mean, it's really slow. And then Advance Auto Parts isn't much better. So O'Reilly is the slightly faster growing of the three businesses, at least when it comes to stores count. Now, remember with a retail business, and we've looked at this at over many episodes, like Starbucks and other types of retail, it's not just about how many stores you have, but also about a metric called same store sales. That means for your stores that already exist from year to year, how much more revenue are those new stores bringing in than they did the year before? And so what happens is when you add this up, these two elements up of growing store count with growing same store sales, that leads to growing overall revenue and profits. So these are some of the components within a retail business. And so we need to look at the same store sales for O'Reilly as well. So what do the numbers tell us? Well, the same store sales growth is also better than their competitors, AutoZone and Advance Auto, at around 3 to 4% per year. Now, in past years, it was much higher. I mean, I saw some data where the same store sales growth was in the high single digits, which was pretty exciting. But nonetheless, they also operate in the same markets that their competitors operate in. And the same store sales growth has been a little bit slow. I mean, it's better than the competitors, but only by a small margin. So the business is truly split between this do-it-yourself customer and the commercial customer. 56% of the revenue in 2019 came from the DIY customers, whereas 44% came from commercial customers. So they really are split between the two. Advance Auto, a little bit more lopsided, and then AutoZone is almost entirely the DIY business. So a little bit of a difference there. Now let's talk for a moment about the industry dynamics. So do you remember several episodes ago when we talked about Copart? If you haven't checked out that episode, definitely check out that episode. I had a ton of fun researching that episode and sharing that with you. Just so fascinating at their business model. So go ahead and check out the Copart episode. If you remember when we discussed it, we talked about the age of vehicles. We talked about vehicles on the road. And the overall age of vehicles on the road has been increasing over time. And this is statistics for America, by the way. So it may not apply to the country that you're listening from. But on average, cars in America a decade ago were about 10 years old. Now, in 2020, that number's increased to an average age of about 12 years. So not only that, but the total number of vehicles on the road has also increased somewhat, not a huge amount, but about 8% total over the past decade. So you have this situation where more and more cars are on the road, and the cars that are on the road are increasingly older and older. Well, what does this mean? This means that the people manufacturing the cars, the companies like Ford and General Motors and Tesla, the companies we've been talking about recently, they are engineering these vehicles to last for a long period of time. So people are willing to keep their vehicles for a long period of time, especially if nothing breaks. I mean, people definitely love to buy new cars, and that's there's a cyclical nature to that, depending on the business cycle. But in general, people will drive cars longer the less problems they have with them, maintenance-wise. So we see these industry shifts. Now, these stats, they point to people keeping their cars for a longer period of time, and the overall miles driven continues to increase. So people are spending more time in their cars. Now, I know that things will probably change with COVID, but nonetheless, these are what the long-term statistics are showing. Now, no doubt people are working from home permanently. I personally drive a lot less than I used to these days, but I'm wondering overall if the number of cars on the road will permanently decrease. And when I think about this question, I don't really think so, because people still need to go out and do things. Even with COVID cases at record highs here in the United States, I'm still observing a large number of people on the road going out to frequent various businesses. So people are going out and just doing things. They're just doing them with masks on. The restrictions that have been placed on us and our movement and our business activity, it's still only somewhat restrictive because people are still really living their lives if you go out and observe. So O'Reilly, like its competitors, they actually saw an increase in business throughout 2020 because of COVID. So just a quick note about that and the current situation. But in general, I think that the overall miles driven on the road is going to increase. It's just going to take shape in different ways. Maybe people may not be driving more or longer. Maybe they'll be driving themselves. But in general, goods and people will be more interconnected, I think, than they ever have before in the history of vehicles, period. I think that's just where we're heading. We're moving toward a faster-paced world. So I think that bodes well for a company like O'Reilly. So management states that when there are recessionary periods, so you have recessionary periods and you have good times, so their business tends to do better during the recessions because people are less likely to purchase new cars and more likely to maintain their old ones. So this fact plus the general concept of total increases in miles driven, that's the basic economic reason that this industry has been thriving. When people keep their cars on the roads for longer, they don't buy new cars, they need to replace their parts. And guess where they get their parts from? They get them from O'Reilly Automotive. They get them from AutoZone, they get them from Advance Auto, they get them from places like that. And that ultimately is what drives this particular business's economic engine. All right, so now let's talk about the financials. It's always important to look at the numbers just to have a sense of what the business is actually doing. Are they actually making money? It may sound great on paper. We can tell a wonderful story about how the business is thriving and how it grows at 200% a year or whatever, but then there's no profits. So let's look at the numbers for a moment. For the sake of comparison, I'm only going to be comparing two major snapshots in time just to see what the trends are like. So we're going to look at fiscal year 2012 and the most recent full fiscal year for the company, 2019. So in 2012, the company had just over $6 billion in sales. And then by 2019, that grew to over $10 billion. So that's about a 7% annual growth rate in sales. So remember that store growth metric and the comparable sales growth metric that we were just talking about a few minutes ago? Well, that's how this plays into our sales. Our same store sales growth is around 3-4% a year. And the store count growth is around 3-4% a year. So guess what happens when you add up 3 + 4? You get 7. That's how you get the overall sales growth of this business, is by looking at these two components and then adding them together. So for a retail operation, we can do just some simple addition like that to see how our revenue is actually getting driven higher. So just a quick note there. Now let's look at the profits. Does this business make money? And the answer is a resounding yes. In 2012, O'Reilly made just shy of $600 million in net income. And in 2019, they made just under $1.5 billion for a 14% annual growth rate in income. Now, this is pretty impressive. 14% annually, especially in a mature market with some pretty strong competitors, particularly AutoZone, they've managed to grow their earnings at 14% annually. But wait, that's not all. Let's talk about earnings per share. So earnings per share, remember, this is how much you and I actually get to keep as owners of the business. It's the profit per share and how many shares that we own that determines our cut of the profits. So the business earned $4.75 in profit in 2012. In 2019, this number skyrocketed to $17.88 per share. Do you know what kind of growth rate that is? That is a 20% annual growth rate in earnings per share. Very strong, particularly for a business that seems kind of mundane and is in a mature market and it has strong competitors. But guess what? They grew earnings per share by 20% annually. So that to me is impressive. So you have kind of this beautiful flow of cash going from the top of the income statement, the sales, down to the net income, the profit, down to the earnings per share, what you and I would get as owners. And you can see that their business, I can already tell you the business controls its costs well because the income growth is faster than the sales growth. So what does that mean? That means your margins are increasing, you're expanding, you're able to actually leverage economies of scale, you're able to actually make more of a profit year after year after year. So I think this is pretty impressive. It tells you that the cost management of a business like this is pretty impressive. But that's not the whole story. The difference between the net income growth and the earnings per share growth, we've talked about this before. AutoZone had the same thing. Why did they have that? Share buybacks. We'll get to share buybacks in just a moment. Before we do though, let's take a look at the balance sheet. The balance sheet, they had about $250 million in cash in 2012. That has dwindled significantly to just $40 million in 2019. So not something I'd like to see here. That's pretty disappointing. But again, this is a heavy capital intensive business. And so I don't expect a ton of cash on the balance sheet to be there. Now, as far as the debt is concerned, the long-term debt went from $1 billion to just under $4 billion over this period. So the debt has almost quadrupled. Again, that's not great, but their competitors are doing the exact same thing. Everyone's leveraging up right now in an area, or an era rather, of low interest rates. As far as the cash flow goes, this is a business that makes cash flow, and it mirrors the growth as well in income. So the business made about $1.2 billion in 2012 that went to just shy of $2 billion in 2019. Their investing cash flow, it fluctuates a lot. Again, I feel bad saying that every episode with the investing line item in the cash flow statement. But, you know, with a lot of businesses, it just fluctuates. You know, sometimes businesses make acquisitions, sometimes they sell part of their businesses to other businesses. So there often aren't many trends or as many trends to identify here. So we're just going to kind of skip that and then look at the financing cash flow. So they're pretty consistent in this regard. They tend to have a total of about $1 billion going out in financing cash flow. Now, as components of that financing cash flow, let's talk about dividends. Does O'Reilly have dividends? No. Just like AutoZone, they do not pay a dividend. So they do not pay a dividend, but what they do is buy back stock. They buy it, and they buy it back consistently. In 2012, O'Reilly had about 120 million shares outstanding, and guess how much they have now? They have less than 80 million shares outstanding. And that means that they are consistently reducing their share count by around 6% annually, somewhere actually around 6.5% annually. Now, this is really beautiful. This is what actually makes that earnings per share number go from 14%, which is the growth in net income, just pure profits, to 20%. 14 plus 6 is 20. So you get that extra component of return because management decided, hey, we're going to consistently return money to you, the shareholder, by just buying back a ton of stock every year, every quarter. And I really like this. I think this is a great capital allocation strategy because they're consistent with it. Many businesses buy back a lot of shares, but they do so inconsistently, and they do so when their share prices are high. By effectively dollar cost averaging these share buybacks, O'Reilly is saying, hey, we're committed to destroying this share count to give you, the current long-term owner, a bigger and bigger piece of the pie. So that's what they're doing there. So let's now close out by talking about the valuation and some closing thoughts. So this is a company that has a long record of steadily growing sales, steadily growing store count and earnings. I really like the consistency. So even in the 2008 to 2010 time period when the economy at large was suffering, O'Reilly increased their sales, they increased their profits in spite of temporarily negative free cash flow. So they did suffer during this time frame, I want to be clear, but they still had sales and profits overall that were going up. And to me, that tells you that what management is saying with being strong in a recessionary environment, those aren't just empty words. You can look at the data to back that up. So that gives me a little more confidence that I can trust what management is saying. Now, clearly the buyback program, it's a priority for management. I love it. Virtually all of the business's cash flows, they get plowed into share repurchases. They buy back shares at about the same rate as AutoZone, around 6% annually, which is very strong. Now, as far as the other components of the business, like its competitors, the debt load has gradually increased. And again, I'm disappointed in that. Cash levels are very low, but the company does have the ability to borrow more if it needs to. So that being said, the overall growth for the company is truly driven by this slow and steady growth. There's nothing super magic about this. They just are very consistent at how they allocate capital. They grow their store count by 3 to 4% a year. They grow their comparable sales by 3 to 4% a year. And they buy back 6% of their stock. Boom. That's how you get your returns there. Those are the components of the returns. Another thing I like is that they waited until 2019 to expand into Mexico. And they seem to have been really careful about that particular acquisition. So Mayasa, that business in Mexico, it's also actually a family-run business like O'Reilly. So culturally, there may be more of a fit there as far as management styles. But, you know, it's still recent, so time will tell to see how the international growth contributes to the overall results of the parent company, O'Reilly. So O'Reilly stock trades right now for around $450 per share. And compare this to about $22 in earnings over the past 12 months, you get a price earnings ratio of about 20. Okay, so this seems a little bit high, but I can understand the valuation relative to the competitors because O'Reilly has been delivering. They've been delivering both the growth to their top line, to their bottom line, and they've been doing so consistently. To me, that's the biggest thing is consistency. And then they've also been delivering the cash back to shareholders through these steady stock buybacks. So with this business, you're getting about 8% top line revenue growth, and that translates into about 14% profit growth, which means they have very good cost controls. And this plus a steady buyback of around 6%, that's what gets you to that 20% annual earnings per share growth number. So I really like that. You know, PE, price to earnings ratio of 20, growth rate of 20%. I mean, that's generally pretty attractive. The question is, will they be able to do this in the future, and how consistently will they be able to do it? So O'Reilly could be trading at a better valuation, but to me, it's clear they have a track record of good capital allocation nonetheless. So I'm going to keep my eye on O'Reilly. I am generally liking what I see, but of course, there are many nuances in investing, and you know, you should look at those nuances, of course, yourself. So that is what I've got for you today. Thank you for listening to the Stock Stories podcast. And my name is Alex Mason, and I am your stock storyteller. I really appreciate you listening. I appreciate the feedback, the Instagram messages. Thank you. I feel the love. And if you want to show some more love, share the episode with a friend, rate and review the podcast. Subscribe to it, of course, if you aren't subscribing already, to make sure you get a new episode every single week when I bring it to you every Wednesday. And thank you so much in advance for that. So until next time, thank you so much, and I'll be back next week. The information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.